Okay, this is the last of our short series on womb to tomb, and as we mentioned, I guess a few minutes ago, Steve was saying to me that there are a lot more things we didn't talk about, Pidyon HaBen, and even Zevet HaBat, and Shalom Zachar, and just a lot of fertility issues that we did not talk about. And today we're going to talk about, it is called womb to tomb, so Rena felt that I should strongly that I should get to the tomb eventually. I mean, to be honest with you, with regard to these tomb issues, this is really going to be a survey discussion, enumerating a large number of issues, and we're going to see that each one in and of itself could be a whole shiur, or a series of shiurim. Yeah. Right, but you can imagine how if I gave a shiur called Death and Dying, I don't know how many people would come and be there.
Please,
come on. See, there you go, right.
Lovey,
right. Actually, it turns out we're going to, well, whatever. We're going to do halacha of the kitchen. Kitchen halacha. Come on, draw a smile. Because the reason, I'll explain to you later. Yes. Ooh, okay.
I'm kind of scared to hear what I'm doing.
Oh, no, no. Remember in Shabbos, it was always how to do it. It was the way to do it properly.
Yeah, I know.
Now, people didn't come away. I hope people came away feeling good about doing the right thing from Shabbos. Yeah. All right, anyway. So today we're going to discuss, I will discuss, what I call the process of dying. And as morbid as it sounds, it's a process. And generally, not always, not in every case, but it's a process. And it's a process that can be managed, that needs to be managed. And I'm going to give some of the halachas of the issues that are revolving around it. And then just some general admonitions from my experience, things that people should be aware of, they need to be aware of, because these are actually issues. Hopefully people will come away with some practical information here. The first thing that happens is usually the person's at the end of life is they get sick. Right? And it could be it's usually, please God, a prolonged illness. And the Gemara says that originally people never got sick. I think it was either Yitzchak or Yaakov prayed that people should get sick, because then you have the ability to prepare yourself at the end of life. So the first thing I thought we would discuss is some of the halachas regarding Bikur Cholim. Because there are halachas about Bikur Cholim. A lot of people, they're intimidated or they're unknowledgeable about how to visit the sick. So there's a Siman HaShulchan Aruch called Hilchos Bikur Cholim. If you look on your sheet, the only one with the Hebrew. You see the one with the Hebrew? We'll read some of it. Okay? Says the Sif Aleph, mitzvah lebakir cholim. It's a mitzvah to visit the sick. Hakrovim v'chaverim, friends and relatives, nichnasim miyad, you can go visit right away. V'arachokim, and distant relatives or not so friendly people, achar gimel yamin, give them 3 days. V'im kafas alav acholi, and if let's say he gets sick immediately, elu v'elu, nichnasim miyad. Anyone can enter immediately, right away, in order to visit the sick. Okay, shift days. Afilu ha-gadol yelech lebakir ha-katan. Gadol in this context doesn't just mean adult, it means a prominent person, an important person, someone of kavod should visit someone who's katan. Small, less important, less prominent. Afilu kama pamim, bayom. Right, even many times a day. Afilu ben gilo, even someone his own age. V'chol ha-mosif ha-reze meshubach. And anyone who adds on, the more you visit, the more praiseworthy it is. Except, as long as it's not a tircha for him. That is an important point, that it's nice to visit the sick. Sometimes, what a person needs, sometimes you have people who are mevakir cholim, and, the person doesn't have any visitors. So they're looking for visitors. It's very nice. Sometimes, though, you got people who are sick, they're in the hospital, the popular people. And so it's morning, noon, and night. Yes, and it's nobody's fault. Everybody means well, but what they need the most is rest, and they don't get that. So the first thing is, when you're visiting the sick, a person has to be sensitive to the needs of the patient. Right? The first thing you have to realize, Bikur Cholim is an interesting thing, because sometimes it's not just psychological support to be visited, but it's also physical support. So yeah, a person who's visiting the sick has to be in tune with what they perceive the sick person needs. It could be a blanket, it could be a nurse, could be a schmooze, but it could be, hi, hope you're feeling well.
Goodbye.
Bye. Good. Right. And there was a member of the shul, one of the members of the shul, who got sick, and I went to visit him in the hospital, and he asked me not to tell anyone, because he's a very private person. And I would go and visit him, I would say, hi, I want you to know I'm thinking about you. feel better. And he told me afterwards he really appreciated how I visited him. Because that was sensitive, you know, it's one thing to be visited. You know, it is interesting because it's very often when we're bikkur cholim, we sort of want to get credit. You know what I'm saying? In our own minds, you want to feel like you spent your time well. I would say, and spending your time well is really giving the person what they need, as opposed to maybe what we would emotionally need. And that's not always an easy thing to do. Okay. Yesh omrim, says the Ramah Tagan, the second line in base. Desone yachol lelech lebakkur cholim. Let's say you got an enemy. You found out he's sick. So should you go visit your enemy in the hospital? So the Ramah says, some opinions, the Maharil says, yeah, even an enemy you should go visit. V'lo nirali, he says, I don't think so. Ela lo yivakir chola, v'lo yinachem ha'avel shuhusono. Some guy gets sick, and you're really your enemies. You know, you can't stand the guy, you guys have never gotten along, whatever. You should not visit him. Why? Sh'lo yichas yachshov shesamach le'edo. V'eino lo ela tzai. Because he's going to think, oh, that Shmendrick there, he loves seeing me in bed. I'm laid up, I'm an avil. So therefore, you shouldn't go visit him because it's going to cause him pain. Ah, I'm doing a mitzvah. Sometimes a mitzvah is a sin because if you're going to cause him pain, that's not the point. Okay. The next one we're going to skip because it means it says you're not supposed to sit on a bed or a chair if he's on the floor. But nowadays, pretty much all the sick people we visit are on beds, so you can sit on a chair. What?
The Hebrew one.
Shiv Dalid. Ain revakrin hachole b'gimel shalos rishonos shel yom. Shouldn't visit a person the first 3 hours of the day. Why? When a person has slept the whole night and he wakes up in the morning, right, early in the morning, so how does he feel?
Oogie.
Better, usually. Early in the morning.
When I wake up.
What?
I don't sleep
in the hospital, right? You don't sleep in the hospital. And early in the morning, he feels. So it's very interesting. Why? He says the person who's visiting the sick, one of the purposes of you visiting that person who's sick is that when you daven, you should daven for him in his situation. So you're going to go there, and he's going to be sitting there eating breakfast, peachy, you know, key, and everything's great. I don't have to daven for him. There's so many other people who are sicker. So you have to go see him in reality, he says, also. Right? And not 3 hours at the end of the day. Then he's really not doing well. Maybe you'll give up and not ask God for rachamim, for compassion for him. It's brought down in Shulchan Aruch. But what it really means is, what that tells me in this siman is, what's a purpose of visiting the guy? Why are you going to visit?
To take away this.
No.
To lift his spirits.
No. Not only that. Obviously not only that. What?
Pray for him.
Pray for him.
Or maybe.
Now, are you supposed to pray for him in front of him? Or are you supposed to pray for him?
When you get home.
Not clear. Why not?
I would think that would be very scary.
Mm-hmm.
You walked into someone's room. You walked into someone's room and started praying for them. You would think.
I very often will do that.
Really? And it doesn't freak people out?
I very often.
Someone is showing up, you know.
No, if someone is sick, I'll come in. It depends on the person. So if it's a person that I know, and they know we're saying the Mishabeth for them, the shul, and whatever, that's one thing. But if someone is ill, and, you know, I don't know them pretty well, or they're really not feeling well, I'll say, would you like me to say a Mishabeth for you? Would you like me to say a prayer for you? And there, nobody ever said no to me. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's very interesting that you have this perception that it's like hokey. You know what I mean?
No, not hokey. Scary.
I think if you, God forbid, had a friend in the hospital and you said, you know, I brought my Tehillim, can we say a few chapters of Tehillim together for you? Do you think that they would be scared or they would feel comforted?
Because
No, why? Why?
I would walk in and say,
like, where in the world, there's nowhere in my job description that says you are the appointed prayer for the community. And I dive in, I do, you know, and people feel comforted by the fact that I include people in my tefillos, which I of course do. But, you know, it's not a one-man show. Who knows? You probably have more schools than I do. You know, I'm a young kid. You've got experience. You've got...
It's perception then, maybe.
What?
It's just perception.
That's exactly my point. That in the Shulchan Aruch, the reason I'm learning this halachas with you is to teach you that in the Shulchan Aruch, one of the reasons why we visit the sick is to connect them with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Now there's this, in America we don't like talking about this very much, but nobody wants to say, well, why did I get sick? Right, that's not a fair question per se. But the question is, am I using this illness, do I see it as a catalyst for me to reach out to the Ribbono Shel Olam? You understand what I'm saying? Do I see this as a way for me, an impetus for me, to daven Rifa'enu, and to see it as a way for me to try and improve myself?
You have to get sick before you realize that?
Sometimes, don't you think? Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I think that, and by the way, Blaine, it's not just, it could be minor things. You know, we go through our lives in such an automated fashion that sometimes we, I would say, forget or neglect things. And the Ribbono Shel Olam does send us messages, and does send us, and it's not everyone and not everything, so it's never my place to judge why any person got sick. But it is that person's responsibility to see the things in their lives as a catalyst to say, am I reaching out? And if a friend would say, I mean, I know you're going to say you feel uncomfortable doing it, but if a friend would come in and say, you know, I brought my tilim, or even, you know, there's one guy that I visit that's sick a lot, and it's gotten to the point where I see him a lot in the hospital. Lo aleinu, he has a chronic illness. And so at some point, I figure I'm going to start bringing a Chavetz Chaim. We'll learn together. Because we could just sit and talk about nothing. I'm very happy to sit and talk with him, but it's more meaningful if we use that time in a positive way. So most people, I would say, not to do that. Yeah, but to bring a little book, to have a tefillah, and to say it together, that Rifa'inu Hashem B'nei Rafei, Hoshi'inu B'nei Vashaya, that we're all praying for your Refuah Shleima, you'd be shocked how comforting that is to people. Just that to be able to give an opportunity to daven, because you're not feeling well, and you're not doing well, and you don't feel like it. And if somebody comes in and says it with you, I think that if it's done in the right way, like everything, it's not freaky, it's reassuring and comforting that this person comes together. And that's a tremendous mitzvah. A tremendous mitzvah. It's hard to do, but a tremendous mitzvah. Yeah?
I think maybe I'm wrong in saying this, but I think maybe in some cases it's more important to try to go visit a man earlier than ladies and see what the situation is. If the man wants it, he might freak it off for helping to put on his tefillin, helping to put on his talent. If he can't, he's in the hospital. He might want that opportunity.
100%.
He might want to give it to him. Try to men.
It's interesting. And Eva thinks it absolutely the right way, because Bigger Cholim is about helping a person do the things he needs to do also. It's not just about coming and saying hello, it's also about, you know, I got soup at home, you want me to, can I bring it for you? You know, do you have, you got a robe, do you have, you know, simple things like when people who haven't been in the hospital in a long time forget, hospitals are incredibly dehumanizing.
Yeah.
You know, they take away your clothes, they take away your things, they put you in a bed like everybody else. And if you can help that person regain some level of their humanity, you know, then it's a very meaningful thing. Okay, let's read on.
Let me ask you something. Yeah. Because I've learned, you don't put tefillin and talis on when you're in a hospital.
Oh, it depends on your physical situation, right? Mm-hmm. If there's a smell or a stench, or a person is dirty, then no. But nowadays, let's say, for example, someone, God forbid, is fitted with a colostomy bag. It's one of the very well-known shiloh, right? A colostomy bag is where your bowels are not working, so they attach. It's a bag to collect the person's feces, you know, through the bag. Can that person dive in? Can that person put on top tefillin? And the answer clearly is yes. Even a person who's catheterized, because the it's considered a separation. It's not all over the place. There's no smell. It's very clean. So you're allowed to dive in. Absolutely supposed to dive in a hospital if a person can. And I'll always say to people, you know, did you daven this morning? Can I get you your sitter? You know,
davening, okay, but you got talus and tefillin.
Talus for sure, because it's not a daven shebe kedusha. Because you wear tzitzis in the bathroom, right? Tefillin depends on the person's situation. If they can do it, there's no better mitzvah. You know, some of the best davening, if you're in the hospital, where are you going to go? You know, you're not in a rush to go to work. You're not in a rush to go anywhere. You could get really, really serious davening done. Okay, Hey. When you ask for forgiveness, if you ask before him, you could and should, then you could ask in any language. So, you know, the Lord God, you know, somehow, for some reason, praying to God, we've relegated to Episcopalian ministers. Right? God, please bring this person a complete, you know, healing. So you feel, we in the Orthodox community feel hokey saying that. Would you not agree? I do. I don't know about you. Just saying it in English. Mm-hmm. But he says, if you want the person to understand what you're saying. You don't want them to not understand what you're saying. You want them to feel comforted. But if you dive in not in front of him, then you should not ask, except for, you should only ask in Hebrew. 6. Vav. Yichlal Osho Besoch Chole Yisrael. So when a person prays for someone, you shouldn't say, please can you heal my friend Jane? Right? You say, can you heal my friend Jane amongst all the sick of the Jewish people? Okay? And you should say, Amakam Yirachem Alecha Betoch Chole Yisrael. And whenever I leave a person who's sick, I'll make sure to say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should bring you a Refuah Shleimah. Right? That they shouldn't forget that it isn't just the doctor who's going to bring you a Refuah Shleimah. And it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know, and that is such an important element of Bikur Cholim. Because, you know, that's our role as part of a community, to connect a person to their Yiddishkeit. And especially in the time of illness, people have doubts and they have issues. There's fear. Right, so any word of reassurance, when you're afraid of something, when you have anxiety about something, and somebody comes to you and says, "Your Rebbeinu Shel Olam should help you," that's a reassurance, and that's a connection. Yes, go ahead.
What happens? I know what I've done. Maybe it's wrong. If the galach walks in and wants to pray for you,
yes.
I usually tell him my rabbi's coming.
I would say that's true. That. Absolutely,
that's all right.
Yeah, because you don't want the galach.
What's that? Priest.
Yeah, usually they have a rabbi for the Jewish patients.
Yeah, but
wants to come pray for you.
Go with some of these hospitals all the time. So sometimes they come before.
He says, "Thanks, my rabbi's coming."
Oh, yeah,
you know.
No, but it's something.
I'm with you. I would do the same thing because you know, even though he's well-meaning, right, the guy he's praying to isn't the one that we're thinking about.
Right.
You know, so it is well-meaning. So you do it in a sensitive way, but yeah. As long as you say, "Thanks, my rabbi's on the way," or "My rabbi was here," I would do the same thing. Okay. Skip to Chet. Ein mevakrim lo lecholei me'ayin v'lo lecholei ha'ayin v'lo lecholei ha'rosh. Very interesting. They had certain types of illnesses in the time of Shulchan Aruch that were the wounds were bad, or it was smelly. So if you went to visit that person, the person himself would be uncomfortable. He would be embarrassed. Yeah. So you have to remain sensitive about that as well. I'll very often, when I go and I know it's a woman, I'll knock first. Why am I going to knock first? Right. Yeah, it's such a simple thing that to walk in on a person. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And say, you know, hello, it's Rabbi Spolter here. You know, can I come in? Sometimes they'll say sure. Sometimes they'll say, wait a minute. Yeah, but it's just so simple. It's such a simple thing. Mm-hmm. And it's a matter of sensitivity to their needs.
It's common sense. Even children want
to say. A lot of things are common sense. What?
Even children want to say.
Everybody's got it, right.
Exactly. What?
She said it's common sense and not everybody's got it.
Yeah, right, not everybody's got it.
It's not very common.
Skip to Yud. See if Yud. The Cholei Me'ayim. In intestinal issues, right? The woman does not serve the man, the nurse, but the man serves the woman. So you're talking about different elements of tzinia. So nowadays, the nurses are professionals, and they have the right and the ability to do whatever they need to do. Okay, and we'll stop here. And that's just in a nutshell the halachas of Bikur Cholim. It's an eye injury.
So you can't visit?
No, nowadays you could. All of these things you could. Meaning. In those times, it was probably festering wounds, and it was unsightly. Yeah. No, they would. But the message being to emphasize a sense of sensitivity and appropriateness to a person. Okay. Next issue is I've turned to the other side. Okay, person lo aleinu shouldn't happen to anybody, any one of us. He should live 120. Poo poo poo, all that stuff. Okay. The person becomes sicker, okay? This is a very touchy one, an extremely touchy one, which you have to sort of flesh out and play by ear. A person who is about to depart this world is supposed to say vidui. Right, there's only one problem with saying vidui. When the rabbi comes in and says, maybe it's time to say vidui,
yep.
That freaks you out. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
What?
It
freaked you out. You're talking about when I came in. See, it's very interesting because even then, I recite the vidui on the person's behalf. But you could understand how that would be, how that's not ideal. Do you understand what I'm saying? In the ideal, what's vidui? Vidui is a personal confession, right? It's a personal charata for your sins. So ideally, the person who's reciting vidui himself. And is conscious, In my experience, it's very rare for that to happen. Mm-hmm. Why? Because you have to have a person who, A, knows how sick they are.
Not only that, they're usually not in a position to say it.
And B, is, well, the question is, the real question is, do you want them to say it? Everybody at some point is in the situation and the ability to say he do it.
Yeah, but everybody that's in the hospital is in the hospital there. He thinks that he's going to be the one that is going to be going out of there. He's not going to stay.
In my experience, that's not always true.
But if they give up, I mean, then they might as well be at home.
Okay, so they're going to go home.
But if they're home and they say, okay, I've given up, I don't want anything more, and then you say...
But I'm saying somebody in hospice who knows what's coming, it's a little easier. Yeah. Because you can say it even earlier, you know, when they're still well and they know they have time.
You can.
Sure, absolutely. Absolutely. You know,
and what if by some miracle they survive?
Ah, read the Shulchan Aruch. Not the lamus. A person is leaning towards dying. Omrim lo, we say to him, hisvada. You should say vidu it. The Omrim lo, and they say to him, harbe hisvadu velo mesu. Many people said vidu and did die. No, what happened to say vidu? We say vidu every day. And we don't say vidu like that. It's serious vidu. But you know, it's almost like we're so afraid to ask people to say vidui that when the time comes that it's necessary, we don't do it. That's why I was saying before, it's very rare for me to actually have a person who says vidui, because it's a person who either is in hospice and is aware of their situation and understands what vidui is, or if it's a person in the hospital, it's got to be a person who is learned enough to understand the importance of vidui, and that overrides the freak out factor of saying the vidui. So you understand what I'm saying? What?
Oh,
you absolutely can say it ahead of time. But to say to somebody, it would have to be somebody who is important enough for them that they understand the meaning of vidui, and that overrides the fear that might instill in them. Because it's scary. Somebody saying to you, maybe you should say vidui. You know, even before Lo Aleinu, somebody has a serious operation. Operations, there's operations and operations. An appendectomy, okay, very good. Hopefully you have a wish lane, but we'll see afterwards. And then there's, you know, a sex couple bypass. When you say to the person, you know, you really want to say to that person what the Shulchan Aruch says, hisvada. You should do vidui. Harbe hisvadu velo mesu. You're entering an extremely dangerous situation. And Lo Aleinu, if it comes out, if you're one of the 7% who don't survive this procedure, or 17 or 27 or whatever the number is, right, you want to be as spiritually prepared as you are physically prepared. That's a very frightening thing to say. It is a very, very frightening thing to say. So on very rare occasions for specific people will I say such a thing. Most people will daven together, you know, well, we'll say tefillahs together, and that'll be it. And that brings them comfort. It brings them a sense of well-being. But more than that, I'm not willing to go. Plus, I don't think it's a layman's responsibility to say that to people. You understand what I'm saying? Meaning, if you're going to visit your friend that you just happen to know, that's one thing. If it's a very close friend or somebody you know very, very well, a child should encourage, I would say, a parent, if they knew who they were, if you know your parent well, to say vidui. You know, it depends on the person. Most young Israel people, most of our people, I think, would want to say vidui. If you say vidui on Yom Kippur and you know what vidui is and these things are important to you, you would want to say vidui. So we're weighing that balance between, on the one hand, scaring the person, but on the other hand, preparing them for reality. For this, that's why I called it a process.
It is
inevitable.
Yeah.
Because none of us ever want to get there. You know, and that's the thing. Okay, so the person says vidui. One second, and what happens? V'harbe shelo hisvadu mesu. I'm still on the top line. Many people who did not say vidui, they died. U'vischash ata misvade ata chai. Maybe in the reward for your vidui, maybe you will live. Because if you do a real tshuva and you cleanse yourself of your sins, maybe the Ribbono Shel Olam will have compassion on you. There's a very famous story. The Gemara tells us a very, very famous story of a conversation between Chizkiyahu HaMelech, King Chizkiyahu, right, the Navi, yeah, and Yoshiah and Yishayahu, and the prophet. Chizkiyahu is on his deathbed. Things are as bad as they possibly can be. And the prophet comes into him and he says, my friend, I'm sorry, I have terrible news for you. The Ribbono Shel Olam says you're going to die. So he says, I'm going to die? What do you mean I'm going to die? He says, that's the way it is. There's nothing you can do. So he turns to the Navi and he says, there's nothing I can do? That's not possible. A Jew can always do tshuva. There's always tshuva. And it says, and he turned his face to the wall, and he began to cry, and he cried to Ribbono Shel Olam, and God sent a healing to him, and he was healed. And you know, nowadays, even with our amazing medicine, you know, every now and then you come across a person where the doctors say, can't tell you why, don't know, but the person is still with us today. You know, but only in my experience, I've seen very few miracles, but every now and then, you say the vidui, and somehow they pull through. Yeah.
Do you not get into, though, this whole idea of we're sick because we sinned? Do you know what I mean? You're saying you have to do vidui because, and then Hashem might forgive you for your sin.
Yeah.
So there's a direct correlation with you're sick because you sinned. And
yeah. You don't think so?
Not 100%.
Meaning there's definitely elements of physical illness, but you know how they always used to ask those guys and Philip Morris, they say, do you think the smoking causes cancer? So what would they all say? No. God, no. Right? So everyone would say, look at them, laugh at them, like, you know, these guys are a joke. Because they are a joke. They would say, is there a statistical correlation between smoking and cancer? Yes, there is. But does smoking cause cancer? No. Because plenty of people smoke two packs a day and never get cancer. You know? They might die earlier, they might cut down their chances, but plenty of people don't get cancer. So bottom line, deep down, do I believe that sin is the ultimate cause of a person's illness and demise? Of course. You know, if you had no sins, so then Ribbono Shel Olam would kiss us on the cheek at 120. We wouldn't live forever. But, you know, there's a process, and we all have what to repair ourselves. Who's to say that it's your time right now? Maybe it is a punishment of Yisurin, or however you want to describe it. It's not my place to choose it for anybody else. It's not my place to tell that person, this is why you're sick. I think that's an arrogance and a hubris. But it's for that person to search in himself. And halacha, and I think that if we're unwilling to assume a correlation, and we remove any connection between a person's spiritual behavior and their physical well-being, then you can do whatever you want. Then there's no ramifications. Then the illness is meaningless, in a sense. But I find that less comforting and more disturbing than to say, you know, there is a correlation, there is a connection. I think it's something that empirically we all kind of believe anyway. Because when a person is, let's say, a person is emotionally distressed, right? A person is emotionally distressed. So does that have ramifications on a person's physical well-being?
Yes.
Sure, right? Heart, blood pressure goes up, and his heart rate goes up, and the walls of his arteries go down, and the stress, and you know, everyone can tell you that. So is it any different if a person is spiritually stressed? The only difference is the doctors can't measure spiritual distress. They can't. They can't measure the health effects of sin. So in America, in Western thought, if we can't measure it, then what are we saying?
Post-traumatic stress disorder.
Doesn't exist.
Right? It does. I'm telling you.
Right, that's true.
Yeah.
But if we can't measure it, right, maybe, okay, you know, but sometimes they don't know what disorders or syndromes are, something that is visible, they can tell you what it is, but they can't tell you why it happened. Mm. You know, sudden infant death syndrome. You know, a kid died, they just can't tell you why. You know, so Chazal will tell you, and it's exactly right. Maybe you'll live. We don't know why. We can't tell you why. Who knows? Okay? And if a person can't do vidui b'peh, yisvada b'libo. He should do it in his heart. And if he can't say vidui, amrim lo, they say, emor, say this, nisasi tehe kapara al kol avonasai. You tell him what to say. Okay? Etc. Shouldn't say these things in front of simple people, and not in front of women, and not in front of children. What's going to happen? And if you say it in a gentle way, it's so difficult to say. But if you say it in a gentle and an uplifting way, maybe you're not going to hurt him. But if you say this, like you said, like, you know what I'm saying, around the family, somehow this is turned into the, you know, last rites. We don't believe in last rites. It's not last rites. It's what can you do to improve your situation here in this world? And that's a chesed too. It's an important chesed. So, you know, you have to be careful. You're weighing, you are juggling different kinds of things, and that's an important thing to be aware of. Okay? So that's vidui. Very important. I would say it's almost like, you know how they do like the testing when the kids get married? You know what I'm saying? They do the testing when they taste testing. So some people do it wrong, some people do it right. How do you do it wrong? You go out with a guy, right? The girl goes out with a guy, they're dating, they fall in love, they're about to get engaged, and then what do they do?
Retest.
Now it's time to test. What are you going to do if it comes out bad? Well, we'll see. So what are you testing for? Right, the test becomes meaningless. The point of the test is, if you do it early enough on,
then you don't get involved.
Right. Then you know not to get involved, or you're okay. I would say the same thing about vidui. Since we wait so long to do it, it has become this thing in our culture that really means this person is dying. Whereas if we did it when a person was seriously ill, but not necessarily, and you know, people lived after vidui, as opposed to the way we do it now, where they almost never do, then it would become something more comfortable. And I think that we do ourselves a spiritual disservice. Like I said, when I say it, Drora, when I say the vidui, it's
heartbreaking.
I know, but it's less meaningful. Because vidui is, who am I, in a sense, to say vidui for you? Right? To confess your sins? You understand what I'm saying? A person has to say it themselves. So if the person can nod or agree, that's one thing. But if the person is not conscious, we say it anyway. We recite it in their presence. But still, it has to be have significantly less value. Okay, that's the next issue. And again, hopefully none of this will ever hit any of us. Lo aleinu. What?
Said, don't say. Don't say.
Yeah. Yeah, brings you back. I'm sorry. Yeah. Okay.
So, vaguely familiar 10 years ago.
Yeah. The next thing. Very interesting. So we're going to sit to something a little less morbid, because it's something... The next issue is an issue that is really doesn't have to do with people who are sick and prolonged illness. But the next thing that happens is if a person is at the end of life, there is called a goses. Okay? Actually, this is relevant. The next stage is a goses. What's a goses? Next Shulchan Aruch. A goses, a person who's a goses is a person who is not conscious, who's near death. So this is what it says. Very interesting. Harehu kechai lechol dvarav. He's alive for everything. Ein kosher mechayav. You don't tie his jaw. I'm not sure why they tie the jaw. Steve, you know? I don't know. Ein shachin oto.
Maybe because you take a convulsion.
Maybe. You don't anoint him. Ein medichin oto. You don't wash him. Ein pokikin es nekavav. You don't, you design his orifices if you want to stop them up. Ein shomtin hakar mitachav. You can't remove the pillow from under him. You don't put him on the ground. Meaning, I guess, when a person dies and they put him on the ground. But he's not dead yet. So you can't do anything. You can't do anything to move him. Okay? You can put the things on him. If you skip down to the, it's interesting. You don't send out the shul email that he about his death or impending death. Right? You can't hire the Chalinim and Mekononos. They used to hire whalers. You know, you would call Star Trek, the party place, right? And you'd say, okay, we're having a funeral. I need professional whalers. And they would come there, ah! And, you know, because they'd get you in the mood. They would have, and flutists. That's what they would have, Mekononos, whalers.
When was
this done? In times of Gemara, always. It was part of the funeral procession.
This is before they're dead.
No, you can't do this.
You can't do it.
Don't do it before they're dead. Okay? You're not allowed to even close his eyes until he dies. This is what it says. Anyone who manipulates or interferes with before a person dies, a very harsh language, meaning you've committed murder. Meaning, and this, okay, you'll tell me afterwards if I can put this up on the internet. Because this is a very, very, very important topic. that needs to be addressed. Because I think that I personally feel extremely strongly about this. It's so strongly that I will eventually talk about it from the pulpit, because it's something that I've seen a couple of times, I would say even a number of times, and it is extremely relevant. In the firm world, we've gotten into our heads that you have to do every single thing you can do to keep a person alive. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, very often we preach, because in the secular world, as soon as a person's life can't be saved or healed, so very often the doctors will go into an opposite mode. What's the mode they're going to go into? Well, if I can't heal them,
palliative.
How have I? It should be palliative, but I'm not going to do anything. Why would I want to prolong the suffering? Why would I want to heal them in any way whatsoever? So, if a person, is suffering from cancer or whatever you have you, and they get an infection, they can't cure the cancer, they wouldn't necessarily want to treat the infection. It might be a little more humane. We'll treat their care, we'll treat their pain, et cetera, et cetera. And halacha is definitely strongly, strongly against that. On the other hand, though, there is such a thing, I believe, as doing too much. As doing too much. And sometimes doing too much can be dangerous as well. So if you look, the next sheet I gave you, okay, there's a bunch of sheets that I gave you. The first one is the healthcare proxy. See the healthcare proxy? They call this a living will. Okay? Life is a sacred trust over which, see where I'm on page 2, there's the healthcare proxy. It's really the reason it's a brochure, so it goes together. Life is a sacred trust over which we have stewardship. We have a halachic obligation to preserve this life and do nothing to endanger it. Active euthanasia is never a permissible option. Since withdrawing either liquids or food inevitably leads to a patient's death, it is a form of active euthanasia. That is also not entirely true.
Right.
Why? By the way, in Connecticut there once was a case where a person had
withdrawing.
Oh, second. Person had end-stage cancer, a member of mine, and he was in a nursing home, and the doctor of the nursing home ordered that he be taken off IV fluids.
That he can't.
Why?
You're starving him.
That's exactly what he was doing.
Right.
Hey, whatever, it'll be fine. Why should I prolong his life? It's exactly that theory. What's the point of hydrating him? It's just going to kill him. On the other hand, this is an important thing. Again, this is not black and white. These are nuances. When a person is in what we would call organ failure, when the person's organs shut down and is very near death, so sometimes it can be an hour, sometimes it can be a day. And so at that point, when the person's organs shut down, his kidneys also shut down. If a person's kidneys shut down, they can't process the fluid. So to insist that the doctors keep hydrating them. You've seen this happen?
This happened with my mother. My mother had a massive stroke,
right,
and everything was shutting down, and the hospice doctor said, we don't see a need to give her feeding tube, and I called the rabbi who said, you have to do it.
It depends on the situation, right? If...
But how they explained to me was everything shutting down, and she doesn't need any more. Not only doesn't she need it...
Right, it can be counterproductive.
It can be counterproductive.
Correct. It depends. Again, you have to finesse it.
It's not starting.
It's a finesse
anymore.
Situation. If a person had a stroke, though, there are situations, not in the hospital, especially in nursing homes, where they'll say, what can you do? This person, had a good life. They throw. That's not allowed. But when they're in really organ failure, so then if you keep hydrating them, it's almost like you're putting water in a tank and it's not coming out the other end. It can't come out the other end.
My mother always said, that's kidney failure.
Right.
And dialysis anymore.
It's a sad thing, because then the person, it becomes more uncomfortable and the person has difficulty breathing because of that. So this rule of withdrawing either liquids or foods inevitably leads to a patient's death is not 100% true.
Right. I mean, psychologically, it's hard to admit. It's
correct
to say, you're not giving them food
right
anymore.
Now, it is interesting.
So, halachically, you can't withdraw. You can
it depends on the situation. No. You're talking about life support.
Right.
You're not talking about liquids. If the liquids are hurting, then you have to withdraw. See, you understand, by the way. Now, but at the end of a person's life, it's exactly my point. At the end of a person's life, there are no good choices, because you don't know what to do. On the one hand, will it preserve life? Will it extend life? Or will it make it worse. There's another point as well. A person is not obligated halachically to take on immeasurable pain to extend their life a measurable amount. I mean, these are well-known, well-documented tshuvas from Rav Moshe Feinstein. Let's say a person is sick, God forbid, and they have 6 months to live. And the doctors say, we can give you an operation and it will extend your life by 3 months, but it's an extremely painful operation. So I'm simplifying extremely, but do you have to take the operation?
No, who needs it?
Well, it depends. Rav Moshe writes, it depends on the person. That's their choice. You understand what I'm saying? It's their choice. And that's a very important point. So I'm going to skip organ donation because I'm going to come to that later.
Yeah.
By the way, you're starting to see how each of these can be a full, a whole shiur or a series of shiur.
Organ donation.
Okay.
I have an impression that you have to bury, as I told my husband, bury a body whole. Can't even think about it.
No, we're going to talk about, well, I don't know if we'll get to organ donation because it's a whole discussion. It's a very,
yeah.
I mean, it is really, you could give a series of lectures on organ donation. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm not sure 100% of the people would be. You know, it's pretty morbid. It's a difficult subject.
Yeah.
Healthcare declaration. This is an important legal document.
Yes, I remember.
What's that?
We went to years ago. There was.
Yeah. So, you know the Ryder's family?
No.
They were before his time. Yeah. He's a kidney transplant.
Uh-huh.
He gave us.
Yes.
Talk about what.
Before signing this document, you should know the facts. This document gives your healthcare providers or your designated proxy the power and guidance to make healthcare decisions according to your wishes. When you are not in a terminal condition, when you're in a terminal condition, you cannot do so. This document may include what kind of treatment you want or do not want, and under what circumstances you want these decisions to be made. You may state where you want to, do not want to receive any treatment. If you name a proxy of this document and that your person agrees to serve as your proxy, that person has a duty to act consistently with your wishes. If the proxy does not know your wishes, the proxy has a duty to act in your best interest. If you do not name a... What was the other page?
Right.
First page. Proxy. Your healthcare providers have a duty to act consistently with your instructions or tell you that they are unwilling to do so. If you do not, in the state of Michigan, have a healthcare proxy, what will they do?
Everything.
They'll follow the law. They will follow the law. This document will remain valid in effect until unless you amend it and revoke it, blah, 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 blah. So now look at the document, okay? Advanced appointing a healthcare agent advanced directive. Okay, the first one is, I, blah, 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 right, Reuben Spelter, appoint whoever you want to appoint as my healthcare agent to make healthcare decisions for me if I'm unable to do so. If he, she cannot serve, I will appoint so-and-so. So obviously, usually it will be a spouse or a loved one, but it probably is not a good idea to have that only that person because, God forbid, what if you're both in a car crash? You know, lower lane, it should never happen, but unfortunately these things have happened. So you appoint someone who's not that person. It's always important to have a secondary person. I know these directions do not cover all possibilities. In cases not described below, my agent shall make healthcare decisions for me after consulting with my doctors. However, I direct in all cases that food and liquids be given. Again, I don't like anything that says all cases.
Right.
It doesn't make me comfortable. Two, concurrence of an Orthodox rabbi. Prior to my agent making a decision about my healthcare, in any case not covered by these directions, one of the following rabbis should be consulted. The rabbi's decision shall govern my agent and my doctors, and they should be A, B, and C. D, if none of the rabbis are available, my agent consults the Bioethics Commission of the RCA, an excellent commission. I mean, excellent, excellent. You know, people are really experts in their field, and I would be comfortable with anything that they would tell you to do. Really, really comfortable. Trick is, you got to make sure that they're answering the phone. Anyway, I can't tell you, the hardest thing is, when a person calls me and says, we have to go into an operation, I need an answer right now. You know, I'm sorry. There are a lot of questions that I do answer. Is my pot kosher? Can I do this on Shabbos? Life and death, I kick upstairs. You know what I'm saying? And I've no, there's no shame in saying that you consult with experts in their field. It's very scary when you're having trouble finding, you know, there are certain rabbis in the country who you can talk to. And they're not always phoneable. You know, they're in the middle of something or they don't answer the phone. Anyway, that's my job, not your problem. Two specific instructions.
They have like...
Emergency hotlines?
24-hour, is this a...
You know, that's not such a bad idea. I don't think so.
You know, like doctors are on call, you have certain...
A gadol on call.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah.
Because it's very nice.
When do you usually need it in the middle of the night?
Not always. Well, not always. I mean, with
a lot of
with your sister, there were serious decisions that had to be made. And I remember... I could tell you a story. We were in New York. On vacation. Rena and I were watching a taping of the It wasn't Martha Stewart who got canceled. Who was the lady there that was terrible that got canceled, the talk show? We were in Rockefeller Center and they said, you want to go watch a TV show? You'll get free stuff. You'll get free stuff. Okay, we got free stuff. In the middle of the show, my phone rings. I'm taking your phone call. I got a call from Michigan. I'm taking the call. The producer comes up to me, blocks the door. The assistant producer says, you can't leave in the middle of the taping. I said, I'm leaving. She says, you know, like a little a girl, like a teenager. You can't leave in the middle of the taping. So the producer comes up, quiet, what's the problem? I said, I'm a rabbi. I'm dealing with a serious situation. She says, he's a rabbi? Let him go. I wasn't missing much in the taping anyway, but what can you do? So, you know, that's not a bad idea. I don't know if there is one. There probably should be one. Somebody on call. It's very hard. It's hard to be one of those gedolim who's going to be on call at that time.
Well, on call for other rabbis, not for just anyone.
Well, it's interesting to note, by the way, I gave a talk. Remember I gave a talk on Moshe Shabbos about the role of a rabbi in medical shilas?
Mm-hmm.
And part of the thing that I talked about was everybody thinks they can call a gadol now. Meaning they know the same people that I do. They know people know who the experts in bioethics are, Rabbi Moshe David Temler and Rabbi Gedalia Dov Schwartz. I'm not embarrassed to say who these people are, so they know who they are. The difference between them and me is I'm able to couch the
like you can filter in
correct.
You know what?
Correct.
Some of the stuff you can answer yourself, probably.
Some of
save
it.
Save them the.
Some of it. Yeah. Some, but I mean, it depends on the situation. It always depends on the situation. Okay, so he says, one, if I am in an irreversible coma or persistent vegetative state, and the opinion of my doctors and two other doctors have no known hope of regaining awareness, then my wishes are CPR, I want, I do not want, mechanical breathing, I want, I do not want, turn, major surgery is removing the gallbladder, I want, I do not want. By the way, you see how you have an option. Kidney dialysis, chemotherapy, intensive diagnostic. Two, if I'm in a coma and the opinion of my doctor have a small possibility of recovering fully, can somebody define for me what a small possibility is? 5%? 10%? 20%? And what is it before? Have no known hope. Doctors will almost never say that. Well, and there's a 1% chance we see in the journals, you know, small possibility. So now, poor healthcare agent has got to look at this and say, well, he wanted CPR but did not want surgery and dialysis. So as soon as I saw this, I said to myself, this one, by the way, you keep reading, number three, if I have brain damage, the opinion of my doctor, which makes me unable to recognize people or to communicate in any way, and I have a terminal illness, blah, 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 blah. Right? Really, I mean, the problem with these things are, you cannot account for every situation. And moreover, even if you accounted for a situation, it happened to be that your situation was in here, it's impossible to know if your situation exactly matches what is described.
I remember, Harriet's mother signed one of these things.
Did she?
She sent us a copy, and Harriet, we called her up, and we said, do you know what this thing says? And she said, yeah, it says. Harriet said, this says, if you're uncommunicative and you have terminal cancer, which you do,
yes.
Well, you know, they will do this. Is that what you really want?
Oh,
how about, well... How about
right.
You just go, you black out?
There's always that question, the what if, what about.
Because they try to take this, these are not
right.
Really
you cannot
good.
Account for every situation, which is why I never recommend people fill out these proxies. Instead, I recommend you fill out the next sheet I gave you, the appointment of a healthcare agent advanced directive. So all I have done, if you notice, is the sheet just with the typing on it. Just the typing. All I have done.
A medical directive?
What? Yes, advanced medical directive.
Yeah.
You don't have it, girl?
Yeah.
All I have done, if you notice, is I took the beginning.
Right.
Okay, you appoint your rabbi. And then I skipped to the end. Witnesses. All I've done is taken out any specifics. Why? Because you can't account for everything. So don't bother accounting for anything. Get somebody you trust. Get another person you trust as well. Because all of us, we're all going to be in the situation at one point or another. This isn't if, it's when. So you want to have somebody who you trust. And they're going to be making the decisions in consultation with the Rabbanim that you trust. Now is the controversial part. The part that, well, you'll tell me if I can put it on the internet or not. I've seen it very often. I won't say very often, but as my experience grows, I've seen it more and more. Where people are members of Young Israel. But their children are members of a more right-wing community. And as soon as you're incapacitated, who begins to make the decisions for you?
The kids.
the kids. And I don't want to, God forbid, denigrate any one mahalach, but there are some mahalchim, some paths, some opinions, which feel that you have to do almost anything. And that's not what necessarily people want. They know what they want. They want, if they could be saved, they want, but you know, at the end of life, a person is in the ICU, there are all kinds of invasive measures. And so I'm sitting there, and the family, for whatever reason, are not members of our shul. They're not looking to me for guidance. They have guidance.
No.
And I've been in a situation where the doctor of the ICU looks at me and says, Rabbi, this is medical torture. And they're not kidding. And there's nothing I can say. And so if you come away from this with one thing, it is, A, pick your rabbi. It doesn't have to be me. Pick the rabbi who you trust, who you think is going to make an informed decision, and is going to be the one that's gonna understand not just what the halacha is, but who you are as well.
And the time to do this now.
Well, time,
right? Yeah, but
and then wait, do it now, and then the second. So you have to pick. You know, there are three rabbis here. There's a reason why there are three rabbis there. And it could very well be you want, you know, the rabbanim of your children. Very good, fine. But if you don't, you make sure that you go to your children or your relatives or wherever your agent is and you say, these are the people that I chose. And that I want you to respect my wishes when that time comes. And to follow those decisions.
Dr. Kevorkian is going to be on parole.
Yeah, Moelena. Blanche, you have great timing. And you understand why I'm going to speak about this on a Shabbos one. For what?
Not in the Jewish news, but maybe in Jewish Action or something.
It's so important because by the time the issue comes up, the person can't speak anymore. So.
But you see, there's an opposite to that too, right?
Oh, one second. Yeah.
That's not their choice.
It shouldn't be their choice. I know. By the way, and it's not in the situation. I'm talking about people calling their rabbi, and the rabbi giving them a psak, and they're following it to a T. It's not that they don't want to let go. Following it to a T. And I don't want to delegitimate that psak at all. It's a legitimate, important halachic psak. But the halacha is, there's a flexibility in there. Like I said, Rav Moshe says, you could ask the person if they want or not. Not everything has to be done. And there are situations where, and in addition, there's situations where, you know, they call a Rosh Hashiva in New York. The Rosh Hashiva's not in the hospital, seeing the situation. How is he going to make an informed decision about what's going on and be able to tell you, is that going to help or is that not going to help? But I said at the beginning, the Shulchan Aruch says, a goseish, if you intervene, it could be negative intervention. And I think that our society has gotten away from letting people die. And there's a respect in that as well. So if the only thing you came away from this was fill out the form and make sure the people who have it for you respect it. And say, listen, I've given consideration to who the Rabbanim are. I want you to ask these Rabbanim. You'll have learned a tremendous amount tonight. All right, have a good week.